Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Off the ball, rugby.
What Jory Barrett has brought to the club, the performances he's had, the punch that he gives, is another dimension on what Robbie's game is. That's the reality.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back now. Mike Garry and the Cassia String Quartet are touring Ireland. It starts off tonight in Pier Street Library in Dublin. Then they're off to Crane Lane in Cork tomorrow, Thursday night. Ballydehob on Friday. It's the Seamus Heaney home place in Ballaghy on Saturday. And then they're finishing up in Workman's in Dublin on Sunday night. Mike, you're very welcome. On Monday night, my apologies.
It's all right.
You got Sunday off.
Give us a day off.
Yeah.
It's a day of rest. Come on.
I mean, you are absolutely up against it at the moment. You've literally come from the airport to studio and... The real treat that people are going to get at home is that you brought the Cassia String Quartet with you, who we're going to hear play in just a few moments. You've already recorded a piece here in studio. How did you find christening the Off The Ball studio to be the first quartet and first musician to play live in here?
You know what? I'm a great fan of jamming and being able to react and perform in the situation that you put in. You put us in a situation, we reacted and we performed. Not the usual place we'd normally play, but I credit your listeners and viewers with the intelligence to look at the room and go, God, they've got a string quartet in there and look at the sound they're making. Just imagine that in some of the theatres that we're playing in the next week.
Oh, exactly, exactly. It'll be on a whole new level, but I thought you sounded absolutely unbelievable,
thank you,
Mike.
Really
so thank you so much for giving us this moment here today. I think a lot of listeners last time would probably say the same thing when they were listening to you in studio last September, I believe it was. Some of the feedback was unbelievable. There was a teacher who got in touch looking for the name of the poem that you read out. They felt that your bit about winning at all costs was being wrong, was completely on the money. There was one texter who said, what a fantastic interview with Mike Garry. Really loved his take on masculinity, sports club ownership. What a legend. An off the ball classic interview. Just love the breadth of the discussions you have. And then Mike Garry, passion evident in every word. St. Anthony is one of the most amazing things you will ever hear. Should have him on at every opportunity. Well, we have listened to you, dear listener. St. Anthony is what we are going to hear right now, Mike. Talk to us about St. Anthony.
So when Tony Wilson died, Terry Christian, Manchester's finest, phoned me up and said, will you write me a poem about Tony Wilson just after he died? I wrote the poem. He was doing it for a radio show, and I turned up and delivered the poem to him. And as I was delivering the poem, Manny out of the Stone Roses and Clint Boone out of the Inspiral Carpets appeared at the window looking into the studio, and I was bottling it. And I did the poem and their faces just dropped. I think they were shocked that a poem could do something like that. But I thought they thought it was rubbish. So I just went out and went, was it crap? And they loved it. Then Joe Dedele got the string quartet together. And I've worked with them ever since, 10 years now. I've released our first album last year. I know we're lazy. No, we're not lazy. We just don't care and we do it when it feels right. Not because we want to be rich or famous, because there's no chance of that. and none of them are ever any good to you. So we have fun with music. That's why we don't mind playing in rooms like this. And that's why we've come to Ireland, because the Irish people get it. They seriously get decent music. And that's why I've chose to tour here first. Listen, most people don't drag a string quartet around with them. What they do is they fly to Dublin and they hire a string quartet. I don't want to do that. I want to work with a string quartet who I've worked with for 10 years, who understand me, my movements, my voice, and can work with that in harmony.
You talk about coming into contact with other musicians. One of the tracks on your album last year is Tonight, and I think that's how a lot of Orbital fans would have come upon your music and your work and your spoken word. How did you come in contact with Orbital? How did that come about?
An amazing DJ called Helen Thompson asked me one day, could she use the words to play with? And she took the words and she just dropped it straight into her favourite Orbital track. Mixed it a little bit, sent it to Orbital, and Orbital loved it, absolutely loved it. I wanted to do David Holmes remix, and we had a bit of a head-to-head with that, but in the end, he went for it, because I love David Holmes' work. So, yeah, that's how that came about. Really lucky, really fortunate that poetry can fit into a sort of, like, a rave classic, and sit so beautifully. But it's a beautiful poem.
Yeah, it really is. On St. Anthony and the Manchester United influence in it, where did that come from? How selective had you to be with the names that you mentioned here in studio today, for example?
So it came around because Tony was a massive United fan.
Yeah.
He was a season ticket holder. He was there every week and he wore his pride on his sleeve. Also, the fact that he was a fan, I wanted to bring it in because it's a big question, isn't it? What is the greatest ever Man United team? And I just imagine sitting there with Tony in heaven. And say to him, go on then, give us yours. I'll give you mine. Greg, Burns, Jones, Edwards, Robson and Roy Keane. Someone has pointed out to me that it has a front line of seven players and no goalie. No, Greg was a goalie, wanted to beg your pardon, Harry. But yeah, that's the United connection to it as well. And also my connection, it's an intimate thing. It's me talking to Tony. I don't care whether anyone else is listening. It's me talking to Tony. You're just lucky enough to hear the things that I'm saying. So it's quite an intimate chat. So I'm like, what's your favourite team, Tony? Go on, give us yours.
We were speaking at the beginning of the season, and I think it's fair to say that maybe optimism levels were low around Manchester United at that point.
Massively low, yeah.
Where is that at right now? If you do a near end of season debrief, there's a pretty big game coming down the tracks in a couple of weeks.
I believe it's all about your perspective in the first place, to be honest. Do you know what I mean? My principles these days, I've always been, well, not always been, but I've become, I hope the best team wins. United haven't been the best team in most games. They've been the best team in selective games. Whether that's acceptable or not, I don't know. I'm not your typical fan. But what I see is this. It's a new form of entertainment, isn't it? Seeing them fall from the bottom, seeing them losing to teams that they should never be losing to in the history. It's just a new form of entertainment. And I'm sorry, I've got mates of these teams who've beat United and I've seen the joy in their face. So I'm sorry if it's not a very cool thing to say, but I even celebrate in the losses sometimes. Champions League. Sorry.
It's coming. It's coming, potentially.
It slipped in. I'm sorry.
But is that due to just being, I guess, trying to get a contagious sense of joy from other people when they're supporting teams against Manchester United? Or is there actually a loss of love for certain aspects of Manchester United that has been a factor for a lot of United fans over the last 20 years?
There's loads of elements of Manchester United that I love, but one element that I think is really important, especially considering the last 20 years or whatever, I think it's really interesting to see them losing. I think it's really interesting to see lower teams beating Manchester United, because for a lot of them it's their FA Cup final and it brings them more joy than a 1-0 win for us and 3 points and mid-table. What's the use?
Yeah.
What's the use?
Because football's bigger than that.
Yeah, it's much bigger than that. You know, It's not just 12 guys, 11 guys on a football pitch. It's communities. It's about communities. It's about families. It's about generations. It's about history. It's about ownership in lots of ways. Now, I'm doing some work with a guy called Mickey P. Kerr at the moment, who was a finalist in X Factor and has written a wonderful book called The People's Shame. And basically, it's about how we have given our football clubs to foreign owners and how, theoretically and really, it should all be fan-owned. So I'm working with Mickey P. Kerr and the supporters organisation, supporters clubs, and Andy Burnham, and because we want to transform the ownership of football. And yeah, we all think football's massive, but you know, if you look at the actual money, it's piddling amounts of money. I know it sounds a lot, £1 million, but compare that to the Exchequer, it's peanuts. It's absolute peanuts. There must be some way we can say to these owners, right, yous go away, here's a little compo, let the fans run it from now on, and bring it back to what it should be, as opposed to just a money-making industry for sort of like American rich men.
It's the great contradiction of being a United fan, I'd imagine, over the last 2 years, where you've obviously, from what you're saying here, it's not a secret that you would like to shed the club of the Glazers. And last year, when Jim Ratcliffe comes in to, you know, help shed some of the club of the Glazers, it is Britain's richest man. It is a billionaire who's coming in to do this. And obviously there have been plenty of questions over the course of his time at Manchester United about United's role in the community and staff on much lower wages than the players being shed and that aspect of things. And I see even Ruben Amorim is paying for staff members away from the playing section of the club to go to Bilbao for the Europa League final. I mean, that's a bit of the umbilical cord with the community of Manchester United being cut away, isn't it, in terms of the post-Ratcliffe era?
There's lots of criticism of it because people are being fired and people are being sacked who've been there for 20 or 30 years and stuff like that. Listen, have you ever met a nice billionaire? Have you ever met a billionaire who understands the predicament of being sacked just before Christmas? No, the guy's got no idea, but he knows how to run a business. And like we were just talking about 2 minutes ago, this is a business now. It's not about people. It's not about communities. It's about making money and increasing the visuals on your franchise. And that's what Jim Ramsbottom's doing. He's gone in and he's doing exactly the same as what he did with cycling. I'm not critical of him. He's just doing a job. I'm not emotionally attached enough, I'm afraid, these days. I've got too many children.
Fair enough. That'll always take priority. I guess you'll get a bit of joy if they do win this game in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, of course. I got joy. Listen. I was with a Newcastle fan last week and he kept saying to me, why do you keep calling them United? There's loads of Uniteds. But did you see the Lyon game?
Mental.
There's no other Uniteds that can do what United did that night. Because they just can't do it. It's not within their capacity. Only Manchester United can do that. I'm sorry if that sounds up my own backside, but why do we keep doing it? Why have we repeatedly done it over time and continue to do? Because it's that ability of self-belief and keeping going. I just wish they'd do it when we were playing Brentford and Crystal Palace and all these. The problem is, footballers aren't readers. They need to read more. I believe books should be intrinsic to football because ultimately when it's very thin lines between great teams, you've got to use all your advantages. And my theory is this, one of the most important things on a football pitch, and I played football semi-pro, is communication. If you've got six different languages on a football pitch, six people from different, 11 people from different cultures and stuff like that, I believe bringing together a group and creating reading groups, seriously, whereby as a community, the team read and the encouragement of reading is done throughout the football club so that an educational element takes place because a lot of those kids are still kids and have never read a book in their life. They might be multimillionaires, but they've never read a book in life. I believe as a poet and as a writer and as an educationalist that the greatest way we learn to communicate is through reading and writing. Now, I know it doesn't sound very cool, let's bring a load of books to a football club, but I always find that cool things stop being cool after a bit. And like I said, it's thin margins. It's thin margins. So let's create football clubs that promote reading and positivity around getting to know yourself and getting to understand yourself and self-awareness and all those things that young men really need to be aware of.
And it feels that if anything, we're moving away from that, actually. It doesn't feel like that's a distinct possibility in the near future. I'm sure there are great things happening in the community, but you look at these multi-billionaire organisations, which sports clubs are, I'm not necessarily sure that they have what you've just mentioned there, which is such a brilliant idea. I don't think they have that at the top of their mind.
No, because they don't have it in their mindscape, really, do they? Because they don't read, neither. I do genuinely think, I was a librarian for many years, I've seen the effect that reading has on people. It changes people into intelligent, empathetic, understanding, deep thinking people. Now, we're developing these young men from academies and stuff like that. If we introduced that at the very beginning, let's say we got them to focus on the history of the Busby Babes, and that was the focus of reading, and that was the sorts of stuff they were reading. One, taking on the history, and two, they're developing their own skills of communication. The most important thing, one of the most important things on a pitch is communication, talking to each other. I've done it. I've done practical sessions with kids whereby one team can't talk, the other team can. And the difference is incredible. And I believe at the very heart of that is reading.
When it comes to writing, what are you writing at the moment? Are you writing at the moment?
Yeah, I constantly write. It's my job. I'm writing 3 books at the moment. I'm writing a book called London, 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 which is about the experience of a northern lad moving to London and his experiences through his life. I'm writing a book called From the Back of the Hire Car, 15 years on the road with John Cooper Clarke and Johnny Green.
That should be fun.
And I'm writing a book without a title, but it's about a very grumpy person. It has got a title, but I can't say it on air. And I write poems every day. It's just a constant thing. I'm just constantly writing.
Like what? What's in your poetry, your daily poetry?
So my daily poetry is what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling around at the time. I've moved to Wales. I'm living in Wales. I've got horses. I've got dogs, I've got freedom. I've come out of a city.
Why did you do that?
Because I've had too much of the city. I've had too much of living in London and living in Manchester and living in places like that. And I want fresh air and I want breathing space. And ultimately, both my parents grew up on farms. Within my blood is that need for green space, is that need for fresh air, is that need for freedom. That's why I've done it.
So is your poetry lighter since you've moved out there?
No, it's actually heavier. Depends what you mean by lighter, really. Do you want a poem?
Yeah, I would love one.
So I wrote this recently, and it's an audience participation poem, and I'll give a prize for the first person who contacts the programme. Probably not allowed to do it. And so this is a poem called The Guy Who Shouted, ... 5 letters, and you've got to guess the last word. Few clues here. Listen to the rhyme. Listen to the narrative, and if you've got any wisdom about Manchester music circa 1965, that might help as well. One second. The guy who shouted. Who was that guy and what was he thinking? Was he on drugs or had he been drinking? Because to think that thought and to shout that word, had he been bought, he should do bird. Was he a Luddite in fear of progression or suffering from some dark depression? Did he think his claim was true or was his shout really meant for you? Because I've bunged these ears with carbolic soap, but I just can't stop the word echo from the very core of my very soul. I'll find a tree and I'll hang a rope. I'll park the car and attach the pipe. The word haunts me every single night. If I could only find that guy, I'd very simply ask him why. Or did he think he was a brand new kind of Jesus, sent to Manchester concert halls to save us from a young Jewish kid with plug-in strings still scratching round for song to sing. I hate the guy who tried to delude us. Who was the guy who shouted? Answers on a postcard. Tenson Lock, Middlesex.
Get in touch with us and a prize from Mike Arry next
a
time.
Book. I'll give a book to the first person who answers that question. I'm tight with my books. They charge me, ma'am. And she's dead. Sorry. That was terrible. Inappropriate. Sorry.
There's a couple of other things I wanted to ask you about. Like, I mean, the role of an artist today has been a massive talking point over the last few weeks, and it's been a massive talking point here in Ireland, particularly after Nika's performance at Coachella and all the blowback they've got, the Sharon Osbourne blowback, the blowback from the investigation happening in Britain, the counter-terrorism investigation that's happening in Britain. It would feel like an episode of Black Mirror were it not a situation that's also happened to a couple of other artists. Like, you look at the Murder Capital and their gigs in Germany being cancelled recently. It feels that if you were to be intimidated as an artist, now is one of those eras where artists would be feeling that level of intimidation.
I totally disagree. As an artist, because as an artist, you are constantly aware. I live in an artist community and we're always constantly aware of how our art is represented. What you've got to realise with kneecap is they're an act.
Yeah.
It's a show. It's theatre. The guy's got a balaclava on his head and there's two young lads dancing around doing stupid things. I will name check Blind Boy here because he did a wonderful, wonderful podcast on it.
Listen
whereby
to it, yeah.
He just spoke about high art and carnival and circus and all those things and how the Rubber Bandits were a massive influence on kneecap. And how the Rubber Bandits used to have dancers on stage with balaclavas on in bikinis singing about the horse. And it was just ridiculous. And it's ridiculous that people are taking this stance because a load of middle-class white kids in Coachella who could afford the price of the tickets had the videos going when the scream was going. Listen, all art is politics. All art is politics. Kneecap, Peter May, and I've seen the film and I thought it was seminal. I thought it was seminal in terms of A, the Irish language. It makes me want to learn Irish, man. It makes me want to go all Duolingo on you. And B, because it's young men expressing themselves now. We're always criticising young men's inability to express himself. I say it all the time. Fergie's last words as those boys walked onto the pitch. Now go out and express yourselves. Now, the greatest thing that happened to music and writing and literature in the last 30 years is rap music, especially for the underprivileged or the working classes, because those kids are now sat in their bedrooms writing and reading poetry, yeah? sharing poetry aloud. What do we want here? Do we want young people to express ourselves, to express themselves, or do we want to be constantly criticising him in a Trump-like world?
And if you want the next generation of artists to come through and express themselves in the exact same manner, I guess that was my initial question. Does the fact that there's a bloody counter-terrorism investigation going on, does that not dissuade them from actually allowing their voices to go out there?
I'll reference Shorty in Man and Superman, where he'll leave his wife starving and his children hungry for his art. And I don't recommend you leave your wife starving. Your kids, maybe, but not your wife. But what I'm saying is, it's about authenticity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being a true artist is about being authentic. You get me, and I'm the same as I am inside or outside. I don't put on acts. I'm myself. I talk about the things I believe in, and I talk about the things that I want to highlight in people's minds. They're doing exactly the same thing. Stop doing them. And also, I'm not being funny, right? But the points they're making are factually correct.
Yeah.
The stuff written on screens are factually correct.
And obviously I know Blind Boy touched on this as well, but the mad idea that it is Sharon Osbourne, and given who she's married to be one of the voices in terms of complaining about what's been happening.
Who are these people, these symbols of righteousness? You know what I mean? These gods from heaven. Sharon Osbourne? Come on.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it is, for them anyway, going to be something that dissuades them, which is almost the most wonderful thing about this. It's just about the opportunities that they get given, and I hope that never dries up. Like, even you can speak from a UK perspective. The US is a bit different, but it feels like the UK are in a place where at least those who run festivals, for example, will continue to allow kneecap to express themselves. I personally have my doubts about the United States, and I mean, kids going over on their J-1 visas this summer are being warned by the Irish state to be careful about Palestine protests and being involved in protest, whereas in the UK it still feels at least you have choice. I don't want to speak for the UK, given you live there, but it feels like there's a bit more choice.
I don't think we have choice anymore. You can't protest anymore. You can't stand up for your own rights anymore. The secret police are everywhere. I think we're living in lots of ways in a police state, to be quite honest.
And right.
Starmer isn't doing anyone any favours, especially not socialism.
No. He seems to have gone back on his principles a little bit since he's taken power.
Well, the whole problem with the political system is the fact that you have to get back in. you have to be re-elected. So it's going to shift your gaze, isn't it? You're not going to look at what's good for you or good for the people. You're going to look at what's good at getting you back in power. Mm. It's a massive fault in the whole system. That's why people go back on the choices. That's why the Liberals went back on the student grants as soon as they were elected. But as soon as they went into cooperation with the Tories, they threw those principles straight out the window. That's why I'll never vote a Liberal.
I know you got to get going and you got to get into your hotel. You got to get out to the venue tonight, no doubt, to soundcheck. Just one last thing, maybe on a broad sense. I know I mentioned it last time. You've mentioned, you know, growing up on a farm, and one of your parents is from Armagh.
Yes, South Armagh. My mum was from a place called Drummondty.
Right.
Right on the border there, St. Bridget's Shrine, St. Bridget's Well, just sort of like 500 yards from the house. We were dragged there as kids. Dragged there. I loved it, though. I loved the environment. Sleeve Gully in the background. Now we're in County Louth. We've got a family house in County Louth. They built an house where they went on holidays as kids. So they went from Drummondty, which is just outside Dundalk, on a pony and trap over the mountain, down to Omeath, which is just next in Carlingford. So my auntie Maureen, who's the Don, 90, last November, she built an house there in the 70s. So that's our family house. And so that's where we all go, looking out over Sleeve, looking out over Carlingford Lock, looking at the mountain, which looks like Finn McCool and all the Irish mythology that goes with that, just down from Carlingford, just up from Newry. It's a wonderful place to have experienced growing up in, and been in Howes Bar, the wonderful place there. I sat on my grandfather's knee from the age of 5, and I've been going in ever since. You've seen the quiet man, haven't you? Well, do you know that they refer to him as the Yank when I'm in town? They refer to me as the Mank. The Manx in town. Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's in the blood. And it's, honestly, I'll say it, I stand in that field in Omeath, and I do feel the history coming through my feet. I do feel the vibe that this is the place where we come from. And I don't care if I grew up in a house in Moss Side, Manchester, or whatever. The fact is that all my generations of people before me have been Irish and grown up on farms. It's got to have an influence on me, hasn't it? Just because I talk like this. There's a lot of Irish in me, isn't there?
Well, I was just, absolutely. And I was also going to say, in terms of a man who loves sport, you know, with the Armagh connection, All-Ireland champions, Two Louth, Leinster champions as of last Sunday, and you got to get the Duolingo out to start learning Irish. I mean, you've moved as far as Wales. Would Ireland be a home place on the horizon in the
Can't
the
afford it.
This is an expensive place.
Can't afford it. It's become dearer than New York, this place. I've just parked my car. I got a mortgage for it. Literally. I might get a sandwich later, but I'm going to have to cash my shares in first. Yeah. It's a beautiful city, but it's expensive, man. And you landlords, you're taking the mick. But that's another subject altogether.
How can people check out what you want to show them, Mike? Where should they go if they want to be internet?
Please check out all my socials, Facepost, whatever they're called, Extra or whatever it's called, Instagrandma. I'm on there as Michal Gary. Please check out my webpage, mikegary.co.uk. Please come and see us. We're in Crane Lane Theatre tomorrow night. We're in Ballet de Hob in Levis's, the wonderful Levis's in Ballet de Hob. We're doing the Seamus Heaney home place on Saturday. Now, come on, Northerners. We've not had a lot of publicity up there, so come on down and see some magic. And on Monday, we're back in Dublin because tonight's show sold out. So we're back in Dublin to play the Workman's Club, 7:30, with the wonderful, wonderful support of the Poetry Kiln Collective, who are ace young poets who I've seen loads of. Come down and see us, come down and check us out.
Mike Gary, a pleasure as always having you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Cassia String Quartet as well. It was an honour to watch you do your thing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
I'm Cyndi Lauper with fellow Cosentyx advocate, Chef Michelle Bernstein.
We'll share our experiences with plaque psoriasis, with psoriatic arthritis, and Dr. Panico will talk about the possible connection.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 mg dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 mg dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur.
Learn more at 1-844-COSENTIX or cosentix.com/Cindy.
Nearly home. Isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pro's number one most trusted app. Finding a home is like dating. You're not just looking for a place to live. You're searching for the one. That's where Realtor.com comes in. Like any good matchmaker, they know exactly where to look. With over 500,000 new real listings straight from the pros every month, you could find your perfect match today. Ranch style with a pool, barn dominium with an in-law suite, Realtor.com's got them. Modern craftsman with a big yard and a treehouse out back, Realtor.com will have you saying, yep, that's the one. No more swiping. It's time to start finding. Download the Realtor.com app today, because you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pro's number one most trusted app based on August 2024 proprietary survey. Over 500,000 new listings every month based on average new for sale and rental listings. February 2024 through January 2025.
Week on Diverted.
¿Te gusta Mayaruna?
Sí, well, you know, cuando tienes tiempo en Argentina es esencial para comer media luna todos los tiempos.
I tell the story of how my hitchhiking disaster led me to the family of Alexis McAllister.
Para nosotros también es un gran orgullo que mi hermano haya jugado con Maradona y Alexis, su hijo, haya jugado con Messi, que son los dos más grandes exponentes del fútbol mundial que dio la Argentina.
I also meet Dickie McAllister at the Buenos Aires Hurling Club, and we discover the national sport of Argentina, pato.
¿Anduviste en otro lado filmando pato ya o no?
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts.
Say Anthony, please come round. Because something is lost that cannot be found. Talk to me of Albion, of Anderton and Abart, Yarndale, Alan, Shoring, Acid House and Alexander Park, Bez the Buzzcocks, Bouncing Bombs and the beautiful Busby Babes, Curtis, Cancer, Christie's, Catholicism, Crack and Kurt Cocaine. Talk to me of all these things, and there's one thing that's for certain, that I'll see the face and I'll hear the voice of Anthony H. Wilson. Design, devoto, development of a dirty northern city. De La Salle, dignity, in the end you waited all the pay. Elvis Engels and ecstasy in a girl called Emmeline. And the hours I spent watching you on the black and white TV. From So It Goes to Sunday Roasting and Chanting and Daring Extreme, I saw you in elephants hosing down some dwarves on black and white TV. Financial muck-ups, poetic form and the fall. 4th of June 1976 at the Lesser Free Trade Hall. Talk to me, oh talk to me, of Gret and God and Granada, of Hockey and of Hannah, and how the fighting just got harder. Hamlet, Ibsen, the IRA, Jesus, Mary and Keith Joseph, Joy Division, Judaism, the importance of the moment, of Liam, London, Lust for Life, and Louis Lee and Linnaeus Banks, of Manchester Music, Marijuana, Majesty and Karl Marx, of nightclubs, new bands, the Order Oppenheimer and orchestral manoeuvres in the dark, topical late night intellectual shadows like the other side of midnight after dark, and talk to me of all these things, and there's one thing that's for certain, that I'll hear the Salford Cambridge songs of Anthony H. Wilson. Of Peterloo, of Praxis, Parisian and Pride. Talk to me of Pont malicious pilot, power corruption and lies of the queens and the queers and the quiet ones, all shy and self-effacing, just like Morrissey, but not Mark Eastman for Sean Ryder when he's been freebasing, or Johnny Rotten, Regeneration Mission and Judy and Vinnie Riley, that stupid yellow circular face known on simply as a smiley, righteous, red, rebellious, ridiculous, down Rossdale and Regent Road. I want to hear the sound of the Salford soft boy moan. Sonny talked to me in the sacristy of a school called De La Salle. Poets, preachers, philosophers, Sonny talked to me, I'm feeling sad. Of Savile Shaw, the Smiths, Stone Roses, a smile so smug and the swagger. Want to hear it from the mouth of an honest northern blagger. Sonny talked to me of the Sex Pistols, the substance streets, the sounds, the sniffed and snorted, stolen, sweet, multi-million pounds. Tony talked to me of the greatest ever Man United team. Was it Greg Burns, Jones, Edwards, Robson and Roy Keane? Was it Best Law, Charlton Styles and Eric Cantona? Cos all the unknown pleasures of the doubles and the trebles and temptations from the stars. Tony talked to me half pissed, talked to me half stoned, talked to me as a boy when I'm sat inside my Fallowfield council home. Talked to me on the telly, then talked to me on the radio, and talk to me at the opening of some arty-farty show. And talk to me a vision, virgin, victory and violence. But don't leave me, Simon, hidden gem. Just listen to the buzz of the silence. Talk to me of Warsaw, drug wars, trendy flats within warehouses. But when it comes to footy, Tony, don't talk to me about the Scousers and all the x-ray specs and all the x-ray tests and all the x-ray therapies and all the XY chats on XFM, the best youth worker I ever dreamed. You be yin and yang, you be master plan of an independent northern scene. So talk to me of Yorick, Yonkers, Youth Club, Bannerbutt, Yates, come and talk to me. Wilson, talk to me. Yates, talk to me. Zeitgeist, talk to me. Wilson, talk to me. Say, Andy, please come round. Cos something is lost and all these years later still hasn't been found.
On this morning's Off The Ball Breakfast,
we had this. Would there ever be a job in Irish rugby again that you might be interested in, do you think?
Yeah. I actually went to Racing played Connacht in Galway. We were like, oh God, we miss Ireland. Like, we honestly, genuinely, I'm not saying it because I'm on with you guys, but like, we really, really had a best time of my career.
And we also had this.
Like, last year, football had, I think, one of the games, like, 8 touches, no shots. And it was definitely affecting my mental health because you're giving so much to something and you feel like you're going home so frustrated all the time.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off The Ball Breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.
Football on Off The Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
I'm Cyndi Lauper with fellow Cosentyx advocate, Chef Michelle Bernstein.
We'll share our experiences with plaque psoriasis, with psoriatic arthritis, and Dr. Panico will talk about the possible connection.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 mg dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 mg dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur.
Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or cosentyx.com/Cindy.